Hi, and welcome to Mouse Chat. This is part two of Jim Hill, continuation from last week, Disneyland Paris and Fast Passes and everything theme park related. So here's Jim.
Okay, I heard a little rumor that you met a kid and he really wanted to go on Seven Dwarfs Mine Train at the media opening, and you helped him out.
Yeah, I did.
Tell us about that.
Well, I to be honest, you got a little backstory on this. This kid's name is Joe. And Joe, okay, like me, is trapped in a water aerobics class. Nancy, about a year, year and a half ago, decided, you know, you've achieved your own gravitational pull. All right, it's you know, we're going to get you into a class. We're going to get you healthy. So you got to understand that when you're in a water aerobics class, and if you're a guy, you're the guy, you know, and you're at the back of the pool because you don't want to be the creepy guy. So, you know,
you'd probably but at the be same, less creepy at the front, though, to be
well,
honest,
you know,
as a
no,
woman.
Well, I understand that. But at the same time, because I'm in the deep end, you know, the potential is I'm drowning anyway. So you don't have to worry about him. All right. He's in the back. He's drowning. Don't worry about it. You know, but there's a really mean joke from The Big Bang Theory about, I forget the one who has the heavy mom who he takes her to water aerobics and just describes that you don't want to go there. Wallowitz. He talks about when he took his mom to water aerobics and you look into the tank and it's like feeding time at the manatee pool. That's really very true. Anyway, to jump ahead, you know, Joe starts showing up at this event or showing up at the class. His mom brings him. He's a freshman in high school. At a high school in Nashua, New Hampshire. And, you know, again, two guys in the back. But finally, somebody to talk to. And he mentions that his high school band is going to Walt Disney World. And not only that, and he mentions the date, and it's like, wow, how weird. I'm going to be there for the media event. And it turns out he's a Disney geek. And so, you know, it just, I said, well, look, I don't know what I can do. You know, because sometimes Disney gets ridiculously strict about this stuff, and sometimes Disney's really good about, you know, letting people in. And, you know, let me see, you know, let me see if I can get you into Seven Dwarfs. And all right, to jump ahead, that day, you know, the Nancy and I are, you know, at the press event. We're there with Shelley Karen from MCO on the go. Very nice lady, by the way. And, you know, suddenly I hear a band marching down the street and they say, oh, it's Joe's band. And I run outside with my phone and I'm taking pictures and I'm being a good supportive adult friend. And, you know, and so I go inside and I'm proudly saying, hey, I got pictures of the band. And then I hear another band marching by and realize, oh, damn it, they're the second band. And, you know, and have to run out and now get pictures. Yeah, and sure enough, they're carrying the thing that says New Hampshire. And so Joe sees me, he waves, I wave. And then, you know, we're going back to the hotel and the phone rings and can you get me in? And meanwhile, we've been up, you know, to look at Seven Dwarfs Mine Train and Fort Knox had less security. I mean, it was one of these things, well, your badge is only stamped for 3:30 to 4 o'clock and it's 4:01 and you can't get in. And just, you know, this because again, they were still dealing with operational issues. And, you know, there were a lot of people who were doing sort of the ride-ons where they had the camera in their face, which I don't understand that video, but okay. But I say, look, I'll see what I can do. And so now it's the nighttime party. And again, you got to go through three levers of security to get into this thing and, you know, finally get in and we're riding in. It's a wonderful attraction. It's great fun. But I feel bad because I'm looking and just, there's no way I'm going to get this kid in here. And I feel bad. He's, you know, just marched through the park in his heavy wool band uniform and, you know, and so it's now the party's going to end at 9 and it's like 8:30 and Nancy hears that Grumpy Cat is at the party. And Nancy, who is normally a sweet, kind, loving woman, loses her shit. So it's like, Grumpy Cat is here! You know, and so it's like, you know, so, you know, it's like...
Is she excited about it, or is she like, I can't believe they have Grumpy Cat
here. No. She is beyond excited. In fact, she immediately drafts Shelly and I, and it's like, you're going to the back of the park to look for this cat. Shelly, you go over there. We're, you know, break! You know, we're all searching for this stupid cat. You know, and so I walk to the back of the park, back by where County Bounty now, then whatever it is, the sideshow shopping experience.
Big Top Souvenirs.
There we go. Big Talk Souvenirs. And it turns out they've put this temporary hedge around it. I mean, keeping the rest of the park up, but the temporary hedge. And there's a hole in the hedge. And mind you, there's a plaid standing there, you know, sort of barring the way. But this is how people are going to get back and forth to the bathrooms, you know, from the party. And it's like, I have discovered the hole, you know. And so, you know, I call Joe, you know, and he's in the park with his family hoping that this is going to happen. It's like, meet me back at, you know, the Big Top Souvenirs place. You know, and so I immediately go out and I start chatting up the plaid and again, we're now in the last 10, 15 minutes of the party and, you know, people are starting to leave and security getting just that wee bit lax. And now here shows up, you know, here Joe shows up and I immediately go into the full court press. And you see this kid all the way from New Hampshire, just marched in the parade in the blistering heat to entertain guests for free. And all he wants to do is go on Seven Dwarfs Mine Train. And, you know, it just... couldn't we do a little Disney magic here to accommodate this poor kid? And the plaid, God love her, I don't know her name, but this really sweet woman just sort of looks at us for a moment and then just sort of turns and looks at County Boundary, sort of steps away from the door and looks, you know, I never noticed that architecture before. You know, there are lots of very interesting color and just deliberately leaving a gap, all right, that we immediately blitz through. And, you know, again, we're racing because the ride is going to close instantaneously. But we get Joe in, and because we don't have the fast passes, we have to go through the whole queue. But he gets to play with all the interactive elements, and he's really excited. And we get him on board this thing, and he's, you know, woohooing the whole time. And as we pull into the station, get out of the car, we walk out the door, and it's like, the party's now over. And it's just sort of like, we did it, you know. And it just, I felt nice because I was able, you know, because we had to leave his mom and dad and like his cousin, who I guess works in themed entertainment in the area. But it's just literally, they handed off their child to me, you know, to take through the you know, I'm not a pedophile, really, honest. I swear to God, I'll bring your kid back. And, you know, 5 minutes later, here's your son unharmed and he's been on a ride. Enjoy. And he was thrilled. He was, you know, just and more to the point, it was so nice to get sort of a civilian in and get their take of Seven Dwarfs Mine Train. Because face it, you know, the weird thing is that when it's people like us who go to the parks a lot and, you know, talk about these attractions months and months in advance, you come in with preconceptions and you've got the story of the, you know, hell, they were doing intrusion tests and river, you know, just you bring a lot of baggage in, you know, and you can't just appreciate it for what it is. And here was a kid who could, you know, I could literally see from his face he'd had a great time. It is a fun attraction. It's a good addition to New Fantasyland. It was just nice to see that. It was just nice to sort of like, okay, you know, so my jaded take on Disney theme parks can, you know, is negated by how this kid experienced and how he enjoyed it. So, you know, it's a good solid D ticket. It's a fun addition. And, you know, just, and more to the point, it was just nice to do. I think I always tried to do that. And in fact, that's, you know, when I'll go to a Disney event and they, you know, they typically hand out a lot of swag. You know, just, it's one of these things where we, Nancy and I sort of have this thing where we filter out the family members or friends who are collectors or that sort of thing. Cause it's more, you know, they really appreciate it. You know, we get a lot of this stuff and, you know, to be honest, I treasure the experiences. I treasure the friendships I make. The gimme cap, you know, is not all that important to me. But to somebody else who, you know, is a big fan of Seven Dwarfs or the stuff we just brought back from Harry Potter, it's just sort of handing it out to the friends who are Harry Potter fans. And so, anyway,
that's really a great story. I think the only thing that would have made it better is if Kid had been a tuba player.
No,
I don't know why. No. That's just funny.
He was a saxophone player. If it's any consolation, what? I don't even think it was a baritone sax.
The saxophone players were kind of cool, but the tuba players, they were kind of nerdy. So you kind of want the nerdy guy to win.
Well, if it's any consolation, Joe's a fairly nerdy saxophone player. Steve, so didn't you know, play tuba? We're close. Oh. So.
All right.
That is awesome. Seriously.
No, again, it's just it's. Ma Hill taught me back in the day. I mean, I have three brothers and a sister, so we were a fairly big family. And the rule one was you share your toys. And it's like, I lucked into this weird gig. This is my job. I, you know, I go to movies, I go to theme parks, this is how I make my living. And it just sort of, you know, you in order, again, not to be jaded about this, you have to share. And that way you get the honest reaction. You don't, you know, you don't find yourself grading in a curve because it's like, well, I know the Imagineer worked on this and I know that his budget got cut and, you know, I just, you know, and you feel bad for the guy. And so, you know, you grade in a curve. You do something like this where you bring somebody in the door who, you know, just this is a thrill. You know, they, in fact, that was like, I saw Joe at an aqua aerobics class about 2 weeks ago. And he said, you know, on the plane flight back, you know, just try it, you know, manage to work it into every single conversation, you know. Yes, I'll have my complimentary peanuts and my Coke. Did I mention I've been on Seven Dwarfs Mine Train? And just, yes, 300 times already, you know. But, you know, to the 250 people in his high school band that didn't get into this, you know, ride, it's cool to have bragging rights over something like that. So
exploit it while you can.
Yeah, there you go. Because right now the whole world's on it, so.
That's true. Mm-hmm. That is true.
It was awesome because we actually, Lisa got to go on it that night, but Steve and I were down there too. And we just sort of were hoping we could sneak in, but that didn't happen. So, but
no, there was,
I got to
Fort
ride
Knox
it
security.
A month later.
Yep.
I know there really was, but I got to ride it just a couple weeks ago and I thought it was amazing.
Really?
I
they
was
didn't.
Just
yeah.
beyond
Rub
thrilled to
Rub
go
it in,
on.
Chris.
They did a nice job.
I know, and Steve, you could have gone on it. You could have gone on it last weekend.
I was at the Cars Masters weekend, and I had our car there, so I was stuck at Downtown Disney. So I did not get to go to the parks.
You could have gone there at night and waited 3 hours.
Yes.
Is that how long the wait is now?
I don't. Is it? Chris was there
recently.
I think
it was probably a couple hours.
Yes.
I mean, it was like... Like, I was down for Gay Day, so it's not really a very good example of the wait times because, it's, frankly, the crowds were really low that weekend. Mm-hmm. But I think it was maybe 90 minutes in the standby. We were able to ride it three times on mm-hmm. the Saturday.
We have clients down there now, and they awesome. Rode it on Sunday evening with mm-hmm. an 18-minute wait time.
No. Oh, wow.
No. I was shocked.
Yes, that's got to be during a parade or something like that,
yeah.
right?
Yeah,
I was
too
tired to stay there late. I should have ridden it like a fourth time. It was great.
They have done a nice job.
Everything I had expected.
More to the point, that the projected. What did you think of the projected faces? Did those work for you guys or
projected faces?
You know what? It worked for other people. I didn't notice it.
I didn't notice it either.
So,
okay, in the actual mine scene with mm-hmm. the blinking eyes and the talking mouths and all that, or
yes,
yeah, they like
well,
light
it didn't
up.
Really look. It didn't look projected to me, and then somebody I was riding with said, "Hey, blah blah blah," and I was like, "What?" So
that's wow. I will pass along that comment to Dave Bosser, the gentleman who. Works in special projects feature animation, that's high praise. I mean, yeah. The fact that you didn't notice it was projected said they did their job.
No.
I wrote it three or four times.
Was I not supposed to?
Yeah, I didn't know it was projected either.
Even better. That's great to hear. Because, again, they were supposed to be traditional AA figures up until 8 months ago, or excuse me, 18 months ago. And Robert Stagg saw some tests, and it's like, let's go that way instead. And you know, they were running and gunning right up until opening. But inside of each of those heads is a lipstick size projector. And every morning, just before they fire up the attraction, there's this grid pattern that appears on the face where they sort of lock in where the eyes, nose, and mouth are supposed to be and then go. And it does that all day long. You know, that, you know, what is it? I think there's a new vehicle entering the tunnel every 50 seconds. So, you know, just as soon as you're going out the drop at the top, they reset and, you know, the next vehicle comes in and Dopey's looking at them through those giant gems. So
that's pretty cool.
We're actually supposed to be down there in August and mm-hmm. Lauren and I are going to plan our fast passes. We're going to ride it together for her first time.
That's right.
Good. Okay.
We are doing that on Wednesday.
Oh, okay. Well, again,
we get there, okay. We are going so maybe right Steve there. And Lisa.
Well, We'll coordinate.
Maybe we can get them for Steve and Lisa. Oh, they won't have their tickets.
Every
stupid
Fast
Pass
South
Plus.
Then.
It's always messing everything up. I know, right? Well, you and I will have everything together because my travel agent, Lauren, will have arranged it.
That's
okay. Why don't we, speaking of Fast Pass, now you guys have noticed just in the past couple of months, you've bumped out Fast Pass, you know, your pre-book Fast Pass from 3 to 4, and you've folded in park hopping. You guys understand what the end game here is, right?
Please tell me. I think I know what it is, but it scares me.
Okay. It's 10 experiences per day per park. You're going to basically be able to, the notion is that, you know, your meet and greets, where you stand and watch the parade and the fireworks. I mean, the whole day you're going to have, you know, because that's the magic number. According to Disney exit polling guest surveys, a guest that's gone out the door that's had 10 experiences, that's the sweet spot. You know, that at that moment, they feel like they're getting value back from, you know, whatever they paid for tickets and admission and flying down and all that. So if you can deliver 10 experiences per park per day, that's the sweet spot. More to the point, anybody who's pre-booked 10 experiences ain't going down the road to visit with Shamo or a certain boy wizard. You know, so and this is all a part of the
locking
Disney. Well, yeah, I mean, just think about it. Think about how Walt Disney World now basically is a walled city. I mean, if you come off the plane and you've got Magical Express, you go straight to your hotel and it's like you're not going over to Crossroads to buy groceries. You're not, you know, or certainly not, you know, without hiring a cab. In fact, it was kind of interesting at a Disney Interactive event. They put us up at the Grand Flow and I was having breakfast in there and listening to this couple talk with a veteran Disney server. But well, how do we get our property? We're going to go see Harry Potter. And you would have thought, you know, the way the server sort of looked around the road to make sure the supervisor wasn't checking up on her. It's like, we want to escape Berlin. How do we do that? and she explained, well, you got to go over to the ticket and transportation center, take the Lynx bus down to downtown, and then take the bus from the Lynx center over to Universal. And it'll take you about an hour, but it's doable. And, you know, but it's just this, you know, if you think Magical Express coupled with Magic Bands, you know, just that's a lethal combination. They're not leaving property. That said, though, when we were down for the Mine Train press event, this was one of the things that sort of made it out to the people who were attending the press event fairly late, and they were kind of pissed off when they found out about it. But the bands we'd been issued were the rock star bands. Have you heard about these?
Oh, does that mean like you get into everything?
No. Everything. I mean, you just literally walk up to the line, like, boop, and you're in.
And, oh, my gosh.
And, you know, but again, everyone with the press event had been issued these things, but not told they were the rock star bands. I mean, there were some folks who didn't find out till they went home. But our Nancy and our friend Angela and her mom, who we'd sort of tacked onto our party, found out about it. And there was raping and pillaging. It wasn't pretty. You know, they just walked up to every attraction of the place, like, boop, 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 you're in, you know. But these exist within the system. These supposedly will be available, but again, you've got to know the right concierge who knows the right person. They will obviously be reserved mostly for VIPs, but at the same time, the whales, the people who spend big, big, big dough when they go to the Disney theme parks, this will be something that, you know, will be on the menu but not talked about. You know, it's obviously going to have its own interesting price point. But that's the weirdest part is that if you listen to the people in guest relations, they've started doing sort of after action reports. They're reaching out to people who've come to Walt Disney World and they're looking specifically for folks who haven't necessarily been recently. And so the Magic Bands are a new experience for them. You know, they're specifically stepping around annual pass holders and people who, you know, have vacationed 2 and 3 times a year at Walt Disney World. They're going for these folks. You know, the 3.75 years crowd, and asking about Magic Bands, and they love it. They love, you know, that you know, when you step up to the main turnstile and you, you know, you do your thing, you're not fishing in your wallet for the, you know, for the tickets. And more to the point, the retail and the food and beverage people also love this because they are already seeing such a huge uptick in impulse purchases. I mean, just in turkey legs alone, you know, I mean, that whole moment, you don't have that moment of resistance where you're looking at something and I have to reach for my wallet and pull out the credit card. And there's all that time that you can talk yourself out of something where with a magic bin, you know, $20 pin.
Chris can speak to that.
You know. We talked about this on the show. So all of us went down in early April. Every one of us on the show was down there in early April, except for Chris Sharps. And I am the cheap mom. I never buy my kids souvenirs. And so the first time I went there with them with the magic bands was early April. And when I got home, my husband said, "What did you do?" He's like balancing the checkbook. And I'm like, "I have no idea." And it was the magic bands. Like it totally, my resistance was gone. They would be like, "Mommy, can I have a stuffed animal?" "Sure." Beep, beep, beep. You know, over and over again. It was awful. Yeah, I will never do that again.
It helped that I had your PIN number too. Thank you, Mommy.
That's where all my snacks went. No, seriously. It was awful.
You're right, but it just it's honestly, you know, when people
it's a mindless situation, which is a little scary.
It is. But face it, for a lot of people who are on vacation, you know, our friend Angela refers to them as tourons. You know, you just come to Orlando and it's like, you know, you leave your suitcase in your room along with your brain and like la 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 la, and you know, just
it's
sort of like
so easy. It's just ridiculous.
So, you know, in spite of what everybody is saying about, oh, my God, they're $1 billion over budget and, you know, just, oh, they'll never recover this money. And it's like I had a Disney executive say, "Jesus, Jim, we're going to recover this money just in turkey legs, you know, just."
That sounds so evil.
It is. But at the same time, it just they think that, you know, the combination of. People, I mean, and you have to understand that for a lot of people, Disney World looks complex. And so the notion of, well, wait a minute, I can sit at home before my vacation and I'm going to go to the Magic Kingdom on Tuesday. And, you know, I'm getting on Haunted Mansion and I'm getting on Big Thunder and I'm getting on Space Mountain. And I know when I'm meeting Mickey and I'm guaranteed a great seat or a great spot to view the parade and the fireworks. It's like, I'm there. I love this idea. And they never flash on the idea that locks you into one theme park for the entire day. And that means you're only eating Disney meals and you're only, you know, when it starts to rain, you've got to go buy those Disney ponchos. And it just, you know, all of that money just pours straight into the mouse's pocket. So it's from that point of view that it's just it's fascinating when you think about Universal's basically spent the equivalent amount of money on its parks and resorts in Orlando, but it's all on attractions or shops or new stuff for City Walk. And where Disney, it's strictly back of the house, you know, creating this wristband thing. Because again, the fascinating difference in viewing the resorts, according to the folks at Comcast, again, Steve Burke, you know, former Disney guy. In fact, you may remember in the middle of the whole Save Disney thing that, you know, while Roy and Michael are in Philadelphia duking it out, you know, Comcast raises its arm and it's like, "Well, I'll buy Disney." You know, that's, you know, and Eisner's like, "Go away, Steve." You know, so this is a guy who finally got into the theme park business. They didn't buy Universal till or NBC Universal till 3 months after Harry Potter opened in September of 2010. And since then, Steve turned on the money fire hose. You know, but he views this as a new property that they're growing, whereas Disney looks at Walt Disney World and, to be blunt, views it as, okay, this is a mature property. You know, we've built too many hotel rooms. You know, we have to figure out how to get, you know, make the most of what we've got down here. So you see things like, I mean, you know, it's really not a coincidence that, you know, for example, Eagle Pines, the golf resort. You know, I mean, statistics show Americans' interest in golf is waning. So what does Disney decide to do? They actually take a whole golf course and go, okay, we're getting out of, you know, we're going to cut back on our golf place. They hand it off to third-party developers. And so that's where you drop your Four Seasons Hotel and your Golden Oaks residential community. You know, that's taking you know, taking what you, something you already had and turning it into a new revenue source. You know, it's, you know, same thing with wristbands, same thing with Magic Maker. You know, that in fact, I had an amazing conversation with the VP in charge of that. And he did a great job of just sort of selling people on the idea that, you know, we're not souvenir photos anymore. We're a photo service. You know, we're, you know, we, in fact, they've, I think they've got four times the photographers that they used to have in the parks right now. And it's all about, you know, capturing, you know, not just the moment with Mickey. It's like, you know, they've broken down the whole interactive with characters to five different moments now. And they're, you know, they're including all of that as in the souvenir disc. Yeah, I mean, it's just, that's the thing. It's all about, on Disney side of the fence, it's all about getting, creating additional revenue streams out of a maturing business, you know, using, making the most of what they have. And at Universal side of the fence is, we are growing the business. You know, that's Cabana Bay, that's, you know, and right across from Cabana Bay, they're clearing a spot for something huge. And the rumor is it's their convention hotel. And, you know, if that's the case, God help us. So.
Yeah, like you said, we definitely see now with Disney where they're doing like VIP type events or these extra parties, or they're
using extras.
Yeah, they're like, okay, let's do the nighttime dining over at Animal Kingdom, or let's do a villain party, or they just use what they already have and then they plus it up.
Well, speaking of which, have any of you done the guys done this after hours dessert party at Epcot?
We're doing it in August. I can't wait.
Really?
Are we doing the dessert party or the
No, not the dessert party, the wind down we're doing.
The wind down, yeah.
Yeah, we're doing the wind down.
So basically you sit there and drink and nosh and watch people leave the park, and
that sounds great actually.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's like the best part of future of World Showcase is just kind of hanging
totally
out late.
Is. It's like eating and hanging out.
Yeah, I have to say, I love being in Epcot after the park closes. Like if you have a late dinner reservation and you're exiting the park from the countries,
and everything's lit up,
there's nobody else there.
Yeah.
It's so peaceful. I love it.
It's so dark. The buildings are the only things that have lights on them because there's no street lights, so to speak.
Everything's lit up really neat.
We're doing Mexico. How bad could it be? We're going to have a good time.
You know what? Can I just say that, Jim, and I don't know if you have done this, but have you done, like a couple weeks ago, I went with a bunch of people to La Cava de Tequila. That was awesome. That was one of the best, most relaxing couple of hours I've ever spent there. So if they can translate, you know, just sitting there having some chips and talking and chatting, if they can translate that into a nighttime thing, I would be all for that.
Well, I think that's the goal. You know, it just, I was kind of hoping someone had done it and could talk about it. And it's interesting you bring up the tequila bar. It's like the only time I've been in there was with Len. We were doing the World Showcase Walk and Talk, the Disney Dish thing. And boy, you don't want to go into a tequila place with Len Testa. I can just, he's very friendly with the bartenders there, and they keep the top shelf stuff behind. And, you know, he was handing me things. Isn't this smooth? Then it's like, yes. And when I learn how to hold on to the floor, it'll be even smoother. you know, you really got to pace yourself with that guy. But yeah, but you're right. It's whether it's Hammurabi Nights or this wind down thing, it's all about taking resources that you have and allowing guests to have that semi-private experience where, you know, that they can feel that they're special and they're VIPs. But at the same time, it makes the cash register ring, and it allows you to extend, you know, that window of getting at people's wallets.
But it also kind of gives grown-ups something to do. Because, like, you know, that park closes at 9 or 9:30, and you're kind of like, okay, what are we going to do next? I mean, it kind of lets you extend your night so that you can, you know, maybe have a little drink and relax and everything.
No, I understand. And in fact, you know, but again, you have to understand, for so many people, the notion of, you know, the words relax in Walt Disney World, military intelligence, jumbo shrimp, you know, just they don't have that experience. They,
they, you know, I mean, and, you know, again, remember, Epcot is the park that has the joking, you know, that Epcot stands for everybody comes out tired. That's a ridiculously big park. And, you know, face it, when, you know, it's the end of the night and everybody's crowded around World Showcase Lagoon, you know, watching Reflections. It's just, you know, I mean, that's one of the reasons why I think they're able to sell this thing, because those of us who have been in that herd going out of the park, the notion, let me get this straight, I get to sit and drink wine and eat things while I watch tired, crabby people leave the park.
It's exactly. Like, yes. That's, you know, true.
It's a win-win.
That's the fun stuff.
Well, and I do that for free at the Magic Kingdom, because if I'm there when the Magic Kingdom closed, I always just find a bench, you know, at the hub and just hang out for a bit. And so this is just like, that's like plussing my experience, is, you know,
I honestly used to do that. But again, I have become such an old fart, you know, just sort of, you know, the whole notion of, and that coupled where when you do what Nancy and I do for a living now, you get this weird ninja reflex where it's like, okay, I've come into the park, I've done what I'm supposed to, let me get the hell out of here, you know, because just the whole,
it's terrible.
Has the fun gone out of it for you, Jim?
I feel bad. In fact, that was one of the reasons why I like doing the Joe stuff, because it's just sort of like, that reminds me, it's like, look, this is special to a lot of people.
Yeah.
You know, and that they really enjoy this. And just because you're a crabby old man who, like, I want to go back to my hotel where the air conditioning and there's Wi-Fi, you know, just sort of like, you know, you pathetic bastard, you know, just be here in the moment, enjoy where you are, you know, just don't look at a line and go, ugh, not getting in that, you know,
and I think the more you go, I think that, you know, the people like, you know, like all of us that go a lot, I think we do tend to take it for granted a little sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you do look at it and go, I'll do that next time.
Well, and you know, the other issue lately, and in fact, who was I talking with at Imagineering about this? You know, we're dealing, you know, in this weird era now where, think about it, you're in line, you're anywhere, you know, 90% of the people around you, you know, if they stop for a second, whip out their cell phones and are looking at messages or checking Twitter or that sort of thing. And it's just sort of like, you know, it which drives the Imagineers bonkers, because it's like you spend all this time designing this queue, which is immersive and, you know, telling a story and setting up the scenes and reminding, you know, letting you know about what the safety concerns are and the height limitations. And nobody's paying attention because they're like, hey, Candy Crush, I almost got beat this level. You know, in fact, that's, to its credit, that was what was really cool about Diagon Alley. I actually stood in the street there and watched as people came around the corner and came through the wall. And like all of us these days, you know, that just, you got your phone out, you're taking the pictures. And what was really fun was to watch the people, they take the first picture too, and then they'd lower the camera, and then their jaw would drop, and they'd actually lower the camera all the way and just look around for like 30 seconds and then realize, oh, geez, I got to start taking pictures again. And it was like, it was amazing to watch that somebody had actually designed something that defeated the cell phone camera. You know, just I applaud the people at Universal Creative for doing that. But from what I'm hearing, that's the same thing with Ratatouille. And certainly, you know, those of us who've experienced Cars Land at DCA, I mean, there are people out there who are doing great, great things these days. And it just, you know, it's the people who design theme parks now just have to understand and respect the fact that we're not experiencing these parks the way the people did back in 55 or 71.
True.
Yeah,
it makes you curious to see what's going to happen in the coming years.
Well, you know, it turns out there are actually, there's a technology that you can override somebody's cell phone. In fact, I was talking with the gentleman who, you know, in fact, I forget which telephone company was actually supposed to come in to sponsor Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark. But there was supposed to be this moment in the show where they were actually, you know, face it, you go into a Broadway show and they tell you, turn off your cell phones. And what was going to be really cool about this is at some point in the second act, they were going to take this technology and turn on everybody's cell phone in the theater
So you'd be sitting there in the theater and suddenly your cell phone would go on and you'd lift it out and it's the Green Goblin talking to everybody in the theater simultaneously. So there is this technology. You can, in fact, use, if you could figure out the right way to incorporate it into a story or an attraction or a ride or whatever, that it could be used. But
Jim, I saw something. It was where there was a theater of people, mm-hmm. and they're watching kind of a preview, one of those little snippets before the movie. But you didn't really quite get the idea behind it until the end.
Oh, I know what you're talking
about.
Yeah,
where you're in a car, you're driving in a car, and then the theater texted everyone in the theater. So they all pull out their phones and look at it.
The accident one, right?
And then they crash.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
So again, you know, see, the technology's there. It's doable. And, you know, for a time, Disney was actually toying with, all right, if we can't beat him, join him. I mean, for example, there was a scene one that was actually being built for Pirates of the Caribbean where basically every cell phone that was in the queue could become Captain Jack Sparrow's magic compass. And so, you know, you were going through the line looking for this series of objects that had been hidden. I think in the end they decided, you know, just the problem is, it then becomes a question of, well, which cell phone system do we use? We make this mostly for iPhones. And it became a decision tree that nobody was comfortable with. So they backed away, but you're right. I mean, it just, that commercial shows this is possible. And, you know, maybe in the next couple of years, they'll break the back of it. And so, you know, you can be in line and, you know, your phone will basically be telling you, hey, pay attention to what's around you. You know, there's a cool thing going on. So.
Definitely interesting.
Yep.
All right. Well, you know what? I think I'm going to go ahead and wrap up the show here. Jim, thank you very much. Jim Hill from Jim Hill Media. We appreciate you taking the time to talk to us about all that you've experienced and all that you've found out and discovered.
I'm excited for like the next 10 years now.
I am,
because everyone's good. Like, I'm excited about all the stuff that came out, but there's always so many cool things like on the horizon, and it's just very cool to talk about them.
No, honestly, it's a great time to be somebody who enjoys theme parks, because frankly, Diagon Alley's raised the bar, but right behind this is Star Wars, and that's going to blow our minds. And even Avatar, for those of us who are like, great, giant blue people, this is still going to be cool. You know, this is still going to be storytelling at an amazing level. And again, I know Disney fans want to root for their team, but it's like the fact that Universal is doing such great work is what's going to drive Disney to do even better work. So we all win. So, you know, stop absolutely needlessly beating up on Universal about, I would never go to that park. It's like, because you're missing out. You're missing out on some cool stuff. And more to the point, because Disney's paying attention, you're getting cool stuff. So rejoice.
Yeah. Yep. Without competition, we're going to be pretty stagnant.
No, that's exactly. So this is what's pushing everything along. And so enjoy it.
Yeah. I would also like to thank PixieVacations.com for sponsoring the podcast. If you like our shows, you can go to iTunes or to mousechat.net. You can download them there. If you've got any comments or questions for us, please send them to us at comments@mousechat.net. Please join us here again next time on Mousechat.